All right. Today's going to be a weird sermon, folks. Weird. Weird for several reasons. So we just finished up a series last week. We're not ready to dive into a new one yet because it's this weird time of year when there's lots of stuff going on. So Sunday to Sunday, things are going to look different for a little while. Also weird because if you are familiar with the sermons I typically preach, usually I start with sort of a main block of text, and we kind of work our way from there, maybe adding some additional stuff along the way. This is going to be unique because we're going to work our way through a single story together, sort of bit by bit, and I'm going to take breaks after chunks and talk for a while, so it's going to be different in that respect. It's also different for this reason. This whole sermon came about because of a single thought that I had that I wanted to explore. We won't get to that thought until two-thirds of the way through the sermon. But the stuff that comes before it, I think, is really valuable to just review because we're talking, as Andy already alluded to, about David, specifically the scene of David and Goliath. And so as we move through the story, I want to unpack some things that are sort of, I think, unique and interesting, but eventually we'll get to sort of the main thought that I had about this scene of David and Goliath. So the title of the sermon, Where Courage Comes From, because what I'd like to do today is explore the obvious courageous scene of David in front of Goliath, but then ask the question, like, where did that courage actually come from? We're going to start in 1 Samuel 17, verses 4 through 7. We'll be in 1 Samuel the whole time, but we're going to start with verses 4 through 7. It reads like this. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. He was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. Goliath is one of the most widely known names and characters from the entire biblical arc. It is still a cultural touchpoint today to talk about a David and Goliath story. Even if somebody has no clue about the church or the Bible, if you use that phrase, a David and Goliath story, we still culturally know what that actually means. Ask any person, even if they have no biblical background, about Goliath, and they will at least immediately know, oh, that dude was giant, right? Not too long ago, the amazing people in our kids' ministry decided they wanted to give our kiddos a little bit more of an interactive experience with, like, what would it be like for those kids to actually meet Goliath? So they made Goliath out of paper and put Goliath on a wall and had the children stand near him. I was in board meetings in Denver this week for EFM, and I texted Cheryl. I was like, can you send me, because I'd seen the picture, I said, can you send me the picture that you have of the kids with Goliath? And she said, sure, absolutely. And then she said, you know what, I'll do you one better. So she decided to give me Goliath. So here he is. Here's Goliath. This is really cool. This is made out of just a bunch of, like, 8.5 by 11 sheets. Thanks. Thank you, tall guy. Look at that. So there we go. So amazing, right? Just to give us an idea, okay? All right, we're going to lay him down. We can be done with him. Yeah, I'm going to lay him to rest back here. Perfect. Thank you. Always at the ready with you. Always. So, but it can be confusing when we read about Goliath because it's a bunch of ancient measurements. I want to unpack those a little bit today. First of all, his height, we're told, was 6 cubits and a span. You guys brought your rulers with cubits on it today, right? Mark that out. Of course you didn't. It's an ancient measurement. Doesn't mean much to us. So here's what it actually meant. A cubit was the length in the ancient world from your forearm, from your elbow to the tip of your middle finger. And you might be thinking, wow, so a cubit wasn't a standard measurement. You're exactly right, because a cubit could vary a little bit from person to person, okay? So it's approximately 18 inches is about the average. So that is a cubit. A span is the distance, if you spread out your hand, from your thumb to your pinky finger, spread out that distance. Again, on average, about 9 inches. So our best guess, approximately, is that Goliath was 9 feet 9 inches tall. That's really big. He also, we're told, wore a coat of scale armor made of bronze that weighed 5,000 shekels. I'm sure you all brought your scales to weigh shekels today. Of course, you didn't, because it's something that makes no sense to us. To translate it, though, for today, it ends up being about 125 pounds. That's how much his armor weighed. And I looked it up. That is the median average weight of a 15-year-old boy. So Goliath is carrying a armor that weighs as much as a 15-year-old guy. His armor. And then the iron point on his spear, 600 shekels, that's about 15 pounds. The whole spear was probably between 25 and 30 pounds. It's called a weaver's rod in the text because that was an ancient thing that they would have heard that and been like, whoa, that's a monstrous thing to try and have as a weapon. Goliath was absolutely intimidating by his sheer size, but that's not all. He was also insulting. Intimidating and insulting. Moving on, verses 8 through 11. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your servants. If I overcome and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. So, to be clear, not all tall people are terrifying. There are some gentle giants who walk among us. But Goliath was both physically intimidating and furiously insulting. And can you imagine for a moment the sound of the shouting that comes from the voice of a man who is 9 feet 9 inches tall? It had to have been thunderous. And in that thundering voice, Goliath has a proposition. "Hey, send out your best guy. And depending on the winner, if I win, then you become our servants. If your guy wins, then all the Philistines will become your servants." We should not be surprised. No one is interested in the offer that Goliath makes. But along with the offer, this is where the insult comes from. We also read that Goliath was defying the armies of Israel. And we need to keep this really important point in mind. In that ancient culture, to defy an army went hand in hand with defying the God that was worshipped by the men in that army. They were inseparable. So when he is defying the army of Israel, he is defying, insulting the God of Israel. This isn't just trash talking. This isn't just saying, "My army is better than yours," or "My hero is better than yours." No, this is trash talking from a Philistine about how the God of Israel is weak and easy to defeat. So if someone, anyone, is going to be brave enough to face Goliath, it isn't just about having the nerve to do something dangerous. It's about a courageous conviction to respond to an offense that is far beyond personal. Sure, the battle will be personal one-on-one, but it's about much more than that. And did you notice the reaction of Saul and all the Israelites at the very end? They were dismayed and terrified. Anyone surprised by that? Good, none of us. And keep this in mind too. Saul does not just make this defiant, insulting shouting once. He does it twice a day for 40 days. 40 days, twice a day, he goes to the battle lines and yells these insults about the army of Israel and therefore about the God of Israel. And this is where David enters the story. David is the youngest son of Jesse. David has some older brothers who are already a part of Saul's army. They're already there at the battle lines. We're told in the passage, in the whole chapter, that David spent some time with and around his brothers at the battle lines, but also we read in verse 15 that he went back and forth between there and tending to his father's sheep in Bethlehem. It seems that this was a common practice for David. He would tend the sheep of the family around the Bethlehem area, then he would go to where the battle was happening, check in on his brothers, others see how things have been going. On this particular day, Jesse sends David to take some supplies, some food to his brothers, and he says, I hope when you come back, you have some good news about how the battle is going. And this time around, David's arrival at times right up with Goliath coming, taking his stand and shouting his usual defiance at the army of Israel. And we're reminded in verse 24, one more time, the response from the army of Israel. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. So we pick up the story in verse 25. Now, the Israelites had been saying, do you see how this man keeps coming out? He keeps coming out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage, and he will exempt his family from taxes in Israel. Now, David asked the man standing near him, wait, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? I mean, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? So they repeated to him what they had been saying, and they told him, this is what will be done for the man who kills him. I find it interesting that David doesn't step up to be the hero until after he perks up about the rewards that he understands will be his if he's willing to face down the giant. I love the inclusion of this detail. Because, friends, remember this, David was a person, a real person. Sometimes we caricature these biblical people, they're Bible people, not real people. We sort of sprinkle a seasoning of, oh yeah, humanity, they're humans, right? They're average people. But we look at them as if they're just biblical people. But no, their humanity is their main dish, not the seasoning. David was a real person. Now, certainly, he's also motivated by his desire to defend the honor of his God, without question. But let's not kid ourselves. The wealth, the wife, and the tax-free living, those are nice perks. Yes, like, think about the tax-free living for a second. Think about how motivating that might have been. So it pains me to mention this, but I will. Because it involves August and back to school, which I know. We don't want to think we're just getting ready for summer break. But during back to school time, it's always shopping time, and they have tax-free weekends. Have you anybody ventured out during tax-free weekend? If you haven't, stay home. It's like vultures moving from one Target to the next, trying to just take advantage of tax-free weekend. So you'd imagine David was probably relatively enthused by the wealth and the wife and the tax-free living from his family. All this to say this, guys, I think we are all a messy mixture of motivations. And it was not bad for David to desire these things. None of those things were bad for him to desire. And I want to make it clear, I don't think those were his primary motivations, but I don't think they didn't play into it. He perks up and asks about it right after he hears some guys talking about it. And then he chooses to go to the king, picking it up in verse 32. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man. He's been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." David said to Saul, "Oh, go, and the Lord be with you." So I thought of something immediately reading this part of the story. I don't read a ton of nonfiction, but there are certain books and series that I have read and that I I do and did enjoy. One of them is the Hunger Games trilogy of books that eventually became movies. And I thought of this because very, very early in the very first book, the main character, Katniss Everdeen, has to step up and volunteer to take her sister's place, to go to what we'd assume would be her certain death by entering the Hunger Games. And there's a famous quote, right? If you read the book, you know exactly what it is. I volunteer as tribute. And I think this is what David is doing. He's saying, I will go. It will be scary. My life will be in danger, but I will go. He steps out in confidence and in courage. And what is he immediately met with? Critique and doubt. Your servant will go. And Saul says, You. You're a boy. He's 9 feet 9 inches tall. He has had military training since he was a child. You have none. Have you been there before? You have the confidence to finally take a step forward, the courage to do so, and then immediately someone doubts whether or not you have it, what it takes to feel and do something that you have a deep conviction to do. Reminds me of that moment where Paul is writing to Timothy and he says, do not let anyone look down on you because you're young. It's exactly what's happening to David at this point. He has courage and conviction and passion, and Saul is just reigning all over that parade. But we also see here, I think, some of the depth of David's courage. It comes from his previous experiences. He talks about the lion and the bear, these dangerous predators that threatened his flock. Now, we read lion and bear, and we don't quite understand, I don't think, what's going on, because generally, where are the places that you see lions and bears today? In the zoo. Some of you in your backyard, if you live more in the wilderness, you might see a bear, perhaps. Probably not a lion, most likely, but these are like rare, not ordinary animals to encounter. Not in David's world. These are not rare nuisance animals. These are real and regular threats to his flock. And as a young boy in the fields by himself, they were a mortal danger to him. Now, they couldn't match Goliath for pure size, but they were wild, beastly, and unpredictable. And David says to Saul, listen, I went after them when they were a threat. I struck them. I killed them. I love the extra detail. And when they came at me, I seized them by the hair and struck them down and killed them. But ultimately, even though he says, I did, he knows who ultimately gave him victory, right? The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion, the paw of the bear. He'll do the same thing with this Philistine. And then he repeats this motivation, this one who has defied the armies of the living God. Now, you're probably on the edge of your seat going, oh my gosh, who's going to win? Well, I'll tell you. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. So David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And all those gathered here will know that it's not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. And as the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him, and reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it out from the sheath, and after he killed him, he cut his head off with the sword. And when the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. You come against me with sword and spear and javelin. I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty. Goliath had every visible advantage: size, strength, elaborate armor, crushing weaponry, but David knew the God who watched over him in the fields with the flock was bigger and stronger. And David says, it's not a sword or a spear that's going to save me. This is the Lord's battle. And when the Philistines see their hero dead, not just dead, decapitated dead. Anybody see that on the flannel graph version growing up in Sunday school? We tend to edit that out. There's not a little cutout of David dragging this large head behind him. But when they see their hero dead, headless, they're the ones, we're told, dismayed and fearful. But there's a key moment, I would argue a key detail, that happens a little before this scene that gets undervalued and overlooked. And I think it goes a long way to show the kind of courage, the kind of confidence that David had to step into this showdown with Goliath. It happens back in verses 38 to 40. Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these, he said to Saul, because I'm not used to them. So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand. He chose 5 smooth stones from the stream. He put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. Now, it's nice of Saul. Saul doesn't think David stands a chance, but he's like, let me give you a shot at survival, kid. Take my armor, my helmet, take my sword. And make no mistake, to wear the armor, to wear the helmet, to carry the sword of the king would have been an incredible honor. An incredible honor. But after David tries it out for just a little bit, he has the courage to tell the king, no. Guys, you don't tell the king in the ancient world no. You don't do that. But see, Saul wanted to fit David into this box of what a legitimate warrior should look like. But David, because of his courage and his conviction, he refused the king. He refused to be put into that box. And here's the one question that grabbed a hold of my heart as I was thinking through this story a little while ago. The question is this: would David have been able to sling a stone if he would have been wearing Saul's armor? And I did some research, and I think the answer is pretty clearly no. The weight of Saul's armor, while not weighing 125 pounds, like an adolescent boy, but that weight still would have completely thrown off his balance, having never worn it before. And the way that it would have fit on his arms, the range of motion that you need to sling a stone in the way that he was going to sling a stone, almost certainly David would not have been able to do that if he would have stayed in Saul's armor. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. I don't think David would have failed if he would have had the armor and the helmet of the king on, because again, it's not David's strength that defeats Goliath. It's God's strength that shows up and brings the victory. But I do think there is something to be said for having the courage and the confidence to know who you are and push back against suggestions from other people who think they know who you should be. David had already talked about defeating lions and bears. We can assume he used his sling and a stone to do those things as well. I would summarize it this way. David knew who he was, and David knew who God is, and that combination of things is extraordinarily powerful. To know who you are created to be, and to know the God who creates you. Those two things together are so powerful. But we're still left with the question, but where does this courage come from? The confidence, the conviction? Because, friends, I'll tell you, I am convinced it did not magically materialize in the moment. The moment he heard Goliath's defiance, I don't think that some magic thing happened that he became courageous. I would argue it developed over time and away from the noise of battle. And I think a great recap of how that courage came to grow within David is found in what you guys already recited together today. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod, your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I don't think there's any argument that this is the most famous psalm in the entire Bible. This might be the most well-known, widely known passage in the entire Bible, maybe with the exception of John 3:16, because there have been enough crazy people in the stands at sporting events holding up John 3:16. But you hear Psalm 23 a pretty fair amount, even outside of the church. This is a psalm of David, we're told in Scripture. The man who spent his formative years as a shepherd reflects on how God is his shepherd. And I believe that it's the experiences that David writes about here, that they come from what he learned of God guiding and guarding his own flock, leading them to pasture and to water and defending them from those who would do them harm. So where does his courage come from? I would summarize it like this. It is David's existing and deeply rooted trust in God who has shepherded him that gives him the courage, confidence, and conviction to face the giant who speaks defiantly against the God that he loves. The God, according to Psalm 23, who is the God who provides, the God who calms and leads and refreshes, the God who guides, the God who drives away fear, the God who stands with us in the face of enemies, the God whose goodness and love saturate every day of our lives. I think that's how he became a man who had the courage to go and face Goliath on the battle lines. There's a lyric to a song, actually a song we're going to sing in just a moment. The song's called Same God, but there's this line that says this, I may not face Goliath, but I've got my own giants. I can say with 99.8% certainty that you will not come into contact with a 9-foot-9-inch human being today, or this week, or probably your whole life. But I will also say with a pretty high deal of confidence that you will face some kind of Goliath, and it will take courage and conviction. And in order to be a person ready to face that Goliath, the way we become courageous is not because it magically materializes in a moment, but because we are people who day to day walk with Jesus. And it's that walk with Jesus that makes us courageous people. So a few things to think and pray through before we finish today. Are you dealing with something intimidating or insulting in your own life right now? How are you approaching that situation? Secondly, looking back, what past experiences can you be thankful for because you know that the Lord brought you through them and used them for His glory later? David said, I took down the lion and the bear. I'm sure he didn't ask for those situations, but they readied him for what was coming. Third, in what ways are you tempted to put on someone else's armor instead of just being the person that God has made you to be? And lastly, what blessings or blessing of following the Good Shepherd are you most thankful for today? Think about Psalm 23. You've seen it, you've heard it, you've said it yourself. What are you most thankful for about following the Good Shepherd? So I'm going to flip through those again while I stop talking. We'll let some silence fill the room. We'll do some reflection individually. We'll ask the Holy Spirit to speak to each of our hearts. And then in a moment, I'll close with prayer, and we'll sing just a little bit more together. Our Father, today we're so thankful for this story, a story that is well known, widely known, a story about the little guy being victorious over the big guy, a story about courage. Thank you for the reminder today that courage doesn't mean putting on someone else's armor. Courage means understanding who you've created us to be. And God, even though we sometimes go through really challenging situations, just like David had to face the lion and the bear, we can sometimes look back now and go, I can see now. I can see how that prepared me for what was going to come next. But ultimately, God, we're thankful for the reminder today that it is in a day-to-day walk with the Good Shepherd that we become people who grow to be courageous. Help us not fall into the temptation that we'll just be courageous when the time comes, that it'll just magically materialize in the moment. But no, we are called to grow in our courage day to day as we walk with you, so that when we do face our giants, whatever they might look like, we'll be ready to respond with courage, confidence, and conviction. We thank you today in Jesus' name. Amen.